Mr. Gibson, reel 11. What other conditions were there in the hospital? Were facilities any better than what you'd been used in camp?
No. We did have separate huts for separate ailments. Fevers in one, dysentery in another, and ulcer wards in another. And at Tarso, the ulcer wards were terrible. For all there were open huts, as you went in, the smell from rotting flesh was terrible. And of course, these ulcers had nothing to treat them with except put maggots in. That was the main treatment. And there was some powder called sulfolamide. If they could get hold of some of that, they could treat them with that. And of course men were having to have their legs taken off. Men like my friend Wilf White were too late, had his leg taken off and died. Gangrene. I used to lie, unfortunately, at the end hut near the gateway where they took the bodies out at night. And at night time I would be lying watching the orderlies carrying out the stretchers, one after another.
Had the Japanese given any additional medication for the doctors to work with in the hospital to those that, you know, try to work in the camps?
No,
basically the same again.
Yeah.
So amputation may have been a pretty desperate thing if they didn't have anything to put the patient to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I presume they didn't have that kind of medication.
No.
The doctors themselves, were they in any better condition than to what than you were?
I think there must have been. Of course, I didn't live in their hut, so I didn't know what they ate and how they slept. But as I said right from the start, because we had to swim ashore, more or less, and had basic equipment, we were at a disadvantage. Do you know, at Whampoa, there was one man, a Malay Vonti, he even had his evening dress with him, which came in grand for when you had a concert.
Had you come across any captured women that were working in the hospital? Or
no. Never saw a white woman from leaving Singapore until after the war finished.
The orderlies, they were British medical staff,
yes,
were they?
Yes, our own.
RAMC.
Yes, yes.
How did you, what did you feel towards them? Were they wonderful men, did they, working with you?
Marvellous, yes. They had to be dedicated to work there.
It must have been very difficult to keep wounds and sores and this kind of thing clean.
Yes.
I know you've mentioned maggots and so forth. Mm. Was it was the hospital run on in kind of military lines, British military lines, military hospital lines?
Never noticed any.
You wouldn't have expected it to, actually.
No,
I suppose in those conditions. How long were you in hospital?
Few months, as this.
Quite a time.
Mm-hmm. But if you were convalescent, you went out to work. I mean, while I was in that hospital, I was on bamboo collecting, I was on building huts.
So there's still, as soon as there saw any signs of life in you,
yes,
in any sense,
yes,
out you went.
Yes.
What happened to you after the hospital when you were, I suppose we might call it some kind of fitness?
Well, by that time, the railway was finished. The speedo was finished. And they didn't need all of us up there because they had to bring food up to us, you see, by barge. So it was better for the Japs to have us further down country. So I was told that I was going down country and I was going by train. Well, I'd never seen the train. I'd been in hospital for a few months during that time that the train was and the lines were laid up. So I got on the train, well, not on a truck really, and I was taken down country to a camp which was newly built. It was out of the jungle, out of the mountains, on the plains, near a town called Nakhonpaton. And it was nice to see civilization again, to see houses and buildings. And from this camp, we could see a wat. A wat is a temple, and it was all in gold. And we could see this, the spire of this, and the trees and the buildings around.
What weight were you by now?
Probably about 6 stone.
And normally, before you were captured,
I'd be about 9 stone. I was never very heavy. 9.5 stone.
And they took you to this camp. What were you doing there?
Digging a bund round the camp. We cleared vegetation and brushwood, dug over fields, planted cotton, and picked cotton. I think probably one of the Japanese officers was in that business, and he thought he would try the cotton.
Was it more equally arduous work as you had been used to?
No. It wasn't speedo, and we worked, but more leisurely. And the huts there, they were proper built of timber. They weren't bamboo and atat, which meant that you were sleeping on something that was level, instead of on bumpy bamboos, you see. Very nice, but unfortunately, the bugs got in. And every hut became alive with bugs, so much so that no one slept in the huts. You slept outside on the ground to get away from the bugs. And while I was there, I had a pain in the side here, and I realised it was appendix, and they took my appendix out, and I watched the cut, and unfortunately, I said, there isn't much blood, because there was just a worm of blood, you see, and they realised that I was watching, so they said to a chap, put his shoulders down, and keep them quiet, and the chap said to me, where do you come from? I said, Sunderland. He said, so do I. I'd never seen him before. He said, what part of Sunderland? I said, Millfield. He said, so do I. Which street? We lived in the next street to each other.
What was his name?
And his name was Brown. He's a semi-professional boxer in Civvy Street, Bomber Brown. And you know, after the war, every Thursday afternoon we have a meeting, and until he died 2 years ago, I used to see him every Thursday afternoon.
Small world, isn't it? Now, you had appendix, so were they able to dull the pain? I mean,
yeah,
obviously you weren't late, knocked out.
They gave me a spinal injection. Now, they'd made their own. I don't know how effective it was, but I felt the knife, and I was able to watch what was going on and talk. So,
and it was bearable. You say you felt
it. Yes, yes.
And this was some concoction that the doctors had
made their
themselves.
Own.
Presumably, anything like that in some circumstances would have killed you in the life that you were leading. You know, that kind of operation might have been a death situation.
And then I don't know. I think. I now think that appendicectomy is nothing, because the day after I had my appendix out, I went to The surgeon who took the appendix out was Windy Dunlop, Colonel Dunlop. And he's revered until his death. There were thousands lined the route when he died in Australia. I've got 50 pence pieces. The Queen's on one side, Dunlop's on the other side.
He's Australian, was he?
Australian. He's a 6'6" man. And he and Dr. McConaughey took the appendix out. I went to Dr. McConaughey the next day. I had to report to him. And he gave me light duties. I said, do you know, if I'd been in England, I would have had a fortnight in hospital. He says, yes, but, you know, we doctors must live. And my light duties, we had to lever all the planks up where we were sleeping on, take them outside, build fires, and run the planks through the fires to burn the bugs and the eggs. Put them to one side and then relay them.
When the doctor said, we doctors have to live, what was he...
He was only...
I thought maybe they had to get you...
Smile on his face.
I thought you meant, you know, you might have to, they had to get you out to work quickly or they would have suffered.
No.
So the situation there was better, and obviously there were one or two things which you were able...
The food was slightly better because it was easier to get. I mean, they were growing, the ties were growing at roundabout. Whereas when we were up in the jungle, the further up jungle, the further the barges had to bring the stuff. Do you know, in the dry season, I was once marched with a troop the opposite way. Normally we walked that way towards the jungle or the railway. We walked the opposite way towards the river. And the Jap was shouting, left, right, left, right. And we marched straight into the river. We thought, what were we going to do here? And then we lined up in the middle of the river, and the water was just above our ankles, and we had to dig a trench in the bottom of the river. And that was so that the keel of the barge could get through to feed the men further up. And when we looked, we were digging, and there were barges lined up waiting to come up. So it just showed how dry it got. Now, during the monsoon season, the river was rushing down. And when men first went up, they built their cookhouses right near the river, handy for the water, right? So what happened in the monsoon season? Every cookhouse was washed away because the river rose so high up the banks. We were at Wampo watching the cookhouses floating down. They were made of bamboo and attap, of course, and they floated.
And you did mention that there were other stories of the monsoon period that you had.
Yes.
Can you recall those?
Well, this is when I left this camp.
Oh, we were still at this camp on the plain. Is there anything else about that camp before we do move on?
Yes, well, as I say, conditions were much better. And I still had my guitar. And Captain Smith came round one day and he said, is that a guitar? Viewers, yes, can you play it? I said, well, I can play the chords. He said, right, can you play those chords? He handed me some chords to play. He said, would you like to join my orchestra? And he had an orchestra, nearly all professional men who had hung on to their instruments. There were four violinists, a clarinet player, two trumpet players who'd been professionals, Lieutenant Wheeler playing the drums, and a bass which had been made, played by an Australian who was a professional musician. I think I was the only amateur. But what an orchestra we had, and what a variety of music. We played everything from Tales of the Vienna Woods to Bounce Me Brother with a Solid Four. We played Torn alla Sorrento, things from Pagliacci. We had a tenor used to sing On with the Motley. We played rumbas.
Did you have dancers with the men?
No, you couldn't dance.
But you'd have concerts, presumably.
Yes, we gave concerts, yes.
And did that include the Japanese as part of the audience?
No. Not there. Not when we were giving a... We had one at Norman Smith himself. He would sing. His signature tune was "I Am Just a Melody Maker." That was our signature tune. And then we had one or two men who could sing quite well.
And it must have done a lot to keep spirits up, yes, having these concerts. Yes.
And we mentioned the monsoons. Well, when the monsoon was about ready, I knew it was coming. You know what told me? The crickets, the frogs, right? And then the wind, a cooler breeze. You'd hear all these things building up in the jungle, and then the rain would come, belting down. And I wrote a piece of music trying to display that. And Norman Smith heard me play, and it was played by the orchestra, and it was broadcast later in Rangoon. But that's why I loved that camp, because of the music. Unfortunately, the Japs decided that there was something else needed doing, and 1,000 of us from that camp were sent to the railway again. Now this time, instead of going north, we moved south. Instead of being in closed trucks, we said, thank goodness, they put us in open trucks. But then we regretted it, because the engines were being fired by wood, and all the burning sparks from the wood were coming onto our bare backs and our bare heads. We didn't know where to go to get away from them. And we found out that the Japanese needed another supply route into Burma. Whether it was to supply or to bring people out, we'll never know. But the idea was to build a road right across the Isthmus of Malaya, from the Gulf of Siam across to the Bay of Bengal, which meant going through jungle, over mountains, and through the worst leech country probably in the world. 1,000 of us were sent to work on that. About 4 months later, there were 180 of us left at the camp. The rest had either died or had been made sick and been sent back.
And you say, how long did the journey take then to get you from there?
Oh, about 2 days.
So 2 days with these, yes, belching trains. And
yeah, because we got so far down, and our men, I don't know, it was our Navy or our Air Force, had bombed one of the bridges, and they'd taken the middle of the bridge out. So we had to get off the train, pick up all our equipment, and cross this bridge. Now the Japs, where the bridge ended, had put some wood planks across, very roughly made, which meant that you had to walk the plank, and there was a drop about 50 or 60 feet below where there was no water in the river, it was all sand and rocks, and you had to cross that and try not to look down, carrying boxes, crates, qualies, etc. And then you had to get into, put all that onto another truck, go back for more, bring more stuff.
Did anyone slip, do you know?
The man in front of me was carrying a qualie. Now that's the metal thing on his head. And he got so far along and he panicked and he couldn't move, and everyone behind was shouting to him to move. In the end, he managed to get down onto his knees with the thing, and then he dropped it. And I could see the thing. You know how a feather goes down in the wind? This heavy metal thing just went down like that and then crashed on the rocks below. Of course, then there was a trouble. It was him lying on the planks and wouldn't move. He had to be bullied in the end to move.
Japs not punish him for dropping his piece of equipment?
The Japs made him go right away down through the jungle, down to the bottom, to bring one piece back so that could claim another one.
And that, as you say, was the journey part of it.
Yes. Then when we alighted from the trains, then we had to walk. And as we were walking, there were planes overhead. And for the first time, the Japs were making us hide in the jungle. For the first time, we realized that some of our friends were up in the sky. Because previously we thought that the Japs just ruled the skies and the seas around. This is where we were resting in the jungle, away from the plains. And I looked at my feet and they were bleeding. Of course, I had no shoes or anything on. And I looked at the chap next to his were bleeding. And we said, what's made our feet bleed? And then when we looked between our toes, we realised it was the leeches. As I said, it was one of the worst leech places I'd ever come across.
And it's difficult to get leeches off once they're in, isn't that so?
Yes. You don't pull them out. If you have any salt, a bit of salt will do. If you have a cigarette end, just touch with the cigarette end. But we discovered that if you licked your thumb, I think there must have been a certain amount of salt, and then stroked its head, it would come out naturally. And that's how we got rid of them.
And because they were sucking, that was going to help your health in any way, wasn't it?
Well, we had very little blood to start off with, and our blood was such an inferior quality. And then they started to eat us, and what with the mosquitoes starting to eat us. And then the horseflies started to eat us.
And what were they like?
Oh, it was like when they got onto your back, and
it was
just like a plunger coming out.
Did they bring any disease with them?
Not that I know of. Actually, where they came from, there was a buffalo died in the jungle, and within days, round that dead buffalo, it was like a cloud. And this cloud was all flies and insects there because of the dead buffalo in the jungle. And that was where, when we were going past that particular spot, no matter how tired we were, we used to say, right, are you ready? Go. And we ran and ran as fast as we could, pulling carts, pushing carts, carrying loads, but run. Otherwise, these horseflies would come onto your back, and it was quite painful the way they plucked, seemed to pluck the blood out from you.
Seeing the, as you say, your friends in the sky must have given you some indication that the Japanese may not be doing so well.
Yes.
Our first indication, probably. Yes.
And then the next indication, we had to build this road, which meant clearing the jungle, right? And then the monsoons came. First camp we went to was a tiny little stream, a hut on that side, hut on this side. To see my two friends, one of whom is still alive, I just had to step across this stream when the work was finished at night. Monsoons came. That tiny little stream became a raging torrent. The huts where we were sleeping like this. And if we sat like this, our legs and feet would be in the river, because the river came through the huts. And the fishes would come and bite your toes, if you had any sores, right?
Were you able to catch? The thought came into my mind that were you able to catch any of these fish for, to help with your diet?
We would have loved to have been able, but they were so quick. I think for about 3 months I never had dry feet, because we slept in water, we got up, we plodged, if you know the word plodged, we plodged in water, we went out, where we cleared the jungle was a swamp and we were walking in water, with the result I don't think I had dry feet for 3 months.
And you suffer no disease through being wet all the time? Your feet being wet all the time?
As I say, there were so many men just falling out one at a time, I don't know what they had. You see, sometimes you'd go to work, you'd come back, get back to work, and down the pathway you'd come, a little straggler would come, poor wretched fella, walking so slowly, willing himself to get back to the camp, but you knew that he was only coming back to die.
What date and time were you working on the road?
The road was from the April until the war finished.
So April of 19...
That would be 1945. We did not know that there was what was happening in Europe. Didn't know the war was finished in Europe. When we were told that the war was finished, we hadn't realised that the European war had finished months ago.
The Japanese or the guards that you had on this work, were they any worse or better than what you'd had?
They were more subdued until they got rattled and annoyed. They could show what they were like. You see, we built this road by clearing the jungle. There's nothing there. When the monsoons came, it became a quagmire. And that's when the Japanese were trying to get their trucks up. And they were getting bogged down. We would have a good laugh. And we realised that then, even after we'd done a full day's work and it was dark, we would be called out, woke from our sleep, to go out to try to lift a truck from the quagmire to get it started. And that was when their sergeant, the Gumso, he had a brilliant idea. He would get us to chop trees down and put rows of tree trunks to form like two tracks so that the lorries could go along them. Of course, what happened? The lorry would get so far, press on that one, and the end would come up and jam in the back wheels. You see? The front wheels press it down, jam in the back wheels. So that was no good. So, although they found that they couldn't get food up to us, they decided they need iron dogs. And you know, within a day or two, there were sacks of these iron dogs. Couldn't get food up to us, but could get to us. And we had to knock these iron dogs in to keep these things down. Didn't work very well, so decided he would have logs placed that way. Right? So we were given the task. At first, it was everyone had to go out and chop down 10 trees, lop them off, tidy them up, bring them down and lay them on the truck. You weren't allowed to go until you'd done that, you see. That was our job.
So the original truck that you cleared wasn't metalled in any way?
It wasn't metalled.
It was just basically the soil, ground conditions.
Except when there was a stream nearby, that was the only place you could have rocks and pebbles and sand. And where there was a stream, then they gave us baskets, and we filled these baskets with rocks and pebbles, carried them on our heads and dumped them there.
And if you weren't working hard, if they were meeting out the punishments?
Oh, yes.
But hadn't changed?
No.
Were you deteriorating again, your condition, to what it had been? I mean, it was pretty low as it was, but this particular... as the war was ending?
I think while I was at Whampoa, I didn't have one dose of malaria. I'd had 20-odd doses before that. And I think that helped me. And I don't know why, but I didn't get malaria when I was on the Mergui Road. Now, an indication that we were doing well at war, as well as trucks going up, the odd truck going up, some trucks came down, loaded up with Japanese wounded. And they were in a very, very, very sorry state, shouting out for water, and their own men wouldn't bother to do anything for them.